I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome back to Radio Times. Tennis fans, and I include myself, have been enjoying Serena Williams battling her way to a calendar Grand Slam at the U.S. Open. That would mean winning four major tournaments in a year. She plays Roberta Vinci tonight, weather permitting. There have been some other matches and players to watch this year, including 34-year-old Roger Federer, who's been putting away his opponents with apparent ease. Today we want to take a look at this popular American tennis tournament, Williams' accomplishments, and the state of competitive tennis for men and for women. We begin with David Waldstein. He's a sports reporter for the New York Times. He'll be getting us up to speed on some of the matches, the best matches so far at the U.S. Open. And David Waldstein, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be with you. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And let me give out that phone number to the other tennis fans in the audience, and it's 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. David, putting Serena Williams aside, and I know that's a silly thing to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. How does this U.S. Open measure up to previous tennis tournaments?
It's a good one.
It's a good one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. It's not. It's not the the greatest. It's funny because, you know, a lot of times if you have a, it's a good tournament. It includes some good upsets. But when you have upsets, of course, that means that some of the marquee players are not there anymore. In this case, that would be Rafael Nadal and Andy Murray, who were both ousted kind of in early rounds. So that. In some ways, that takes away from it. I wouldn't say this is the you know, one of the best U.S. Opens, but I think it's been pretty enjoyable, and people seem to be really latching on to Serena's potential Grand Slam.
And I'll be asking all of our guests about Serena Williams. What do you see when you see her play this time?
Well, she's on a mission. With Serena, the only person that can beat Serena is Serena.
Yeah, you can see that.
She plays her game, she's going to win. There's nobody that can beat her when Serena's on. So she had a couple of matches where she was struggling, and that's been a familiar theme as she's gone for the Grand Slam. She went to three sets a couple of times when it didn't look like she should have, and had to go to some tiebreakers, and she's lost, I think, 10 sets along the way this year in the major tournament. So that's going to three sets more than she should. But the last couple of matches, she's really put it together. Even the one against Venus that went three sets. That's kind of a weird, typically weird when they play a weird match because it was three sets, but none of the sets are really that competitive.
You had mentioned Murray and Nadal, both of whom lost at the U.S. Open. What's happening with Nadal? Do you have an understanding, an analysis of what's going on with him and his game?
Well, it might just be that he's played a lot, wearing down and getting a little older. His game is predicated on a couple of things. One of them is his ability to chase down any ball, be in the right position to hit it back. And if he loses, say, a quarter of a step, maybe when he gets to the ball, but he doesn't hit it back with the authority that he would like. And, for instance, against Fabio Fognini, the Italian that beat him, there were these incredibly long points. But it was Nadal who was doing all the running. He couldn't turn defense into offense. And so when he would get to the ball, he'd just hit right back to Fognini. So Fognini was standing in the middle of the baseline, and it's kind of like he had Nadal on a stick, moving him back and forth. And Nadal was doing most of the running, and he couldn't force Fognini to run. So maybe it's that. You know, he did miss some time with injuries. Injuries have always been a thing with him that maybe kept him from potentially being the greatest player of all time, because he has 14 major victories, and Federer has 17. And Federer could not really beat Nadal toward the end. But Nadal's always had knee problems, had tendonitis, had other things, back problems, and so I think it's a physical thing with him.
Yeah. I watched Kevin Anderson, a very tall, I believe he's South African, a very tall player, beat Andy Murray, third seeded. This was four sets. Kevin Anderson was 15th seeded. Now he's been defeated, but it was a game with really long rallies, you know, 4+ hours of play. How was Anderson able to get what looked like get inside Murray's head?
Yeah, Murray was very frustrated with him. First of all, Anderson has a great serve. He's coming into a really good period in his career at age 29, which is not so unfamiliar now. You got Stan Wawrinka who broke through into the to winning majors in his late 20s. Federer is still playing great at 34. Anderson may be on that track a little bit. I don't think he's quite as talented as the other guys, but he's very, he's a very technically proficient player. He's 6'8", so he's got the big serve, and he's very smart. He's a really smart, interesting guy. He's from South Africa, went to play collegiately at Illinois, married a woman from the United States, and has kind of is taking up residency here. Very, very intelligent, very introspective. I think he uses that to his favor also. But he just got overwhelmed by Stan Wawrinka last night.
Andy Murray was, I mean, maybe this is typical for him. Just I couldn't tell, who was he yelling at? I mean, clearly he was yelling at himself. Looks like he was yelling at his coaches. He was very frustrated. And I mean, but let me tell you, I can relate to that. Tennis is hard.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think if you have a coach, it's sort of an extension of yourself. So if you're yelling at your coach, you're kind of yelling at yourself. Whereas when you and I play, we don't have coaches.
No, we don't. It's all our fault.
I mean, Andy's always been like that. He's when he was younger, he was more demonstrative, more emotional, and whiny at times. As he's matured and had more success, you see it less. But you're right. In that match, it did come out. He was very frustrated. I don't know if you saw Djokovic the other night. He did a similar thing where he was very frustrated. And he goes back to his chair and he buries his face in a towel and screams in it. But then looks up at his box and just unleashes this really frightening, scary look and yell. And he did that twice in an instant, and then recomposed himself and went out and took care of the match.
And our coaches who are sitting in the stands, are they allowed to send signals or in any way indicate what a player should do?
No, of course they do. You're allowed, I think it's on the women's tour, Grand Slam events. They do have coaching sometimes, and the coaches will actually come on court and talk to them. But at these big events, the four big events, they're not allowed to do that. But they get away with it in some minor ways. That's been going on for a long time.
Are there some rising stars, perhaps even names that we don't know yet, that have caught your eye that you feel, if they're not going to be the next Serena Williams, but feel that they have some potential to go places?
Well, it's going to be a long time before there's another Serena Williams. She's unique. I'll tell you, there's a young Swiss woman named Belinda Bencic, who I think is very talented and has a chance to do well. She might have to wait for Serena to retire to dominate, but she's coached by Martina Hingis's mother and a little bit by Martina also. On the American side, there is a group of juniors, of boys, that is really coming along. Guys like Taylor Fritz, who's the number one seed in the boys' draw, Michael Moe, who I wrote about, who is a very interesting guy, and he's the number two seed. There's a guy named Paul. There's Francis Tiafo. There's Riley Opelka, who's, I think, at least 6'9".
Wow.
And he's got a big personality. He's a very good player. I think you're going to see, at least a couple of these American boys really break through the way that we were kind of hoping that Sam Querrey, John Isner, Donald Young would do after Andy Roddick. But those guys had a lot of pressure on them to be the next Roddick. And these guys don't have that pressure. So they're doing very, very well. And, you know, they're all about 16, 17 and worth keeping an eye on.
What does a tennis game look like at the very top of, what is it, Arthur Ashe Stadium? Is it just like tiny, tiny little dots hitting this even tinier little ball?
Yeah, it's funny. It's such a big stadium. It's the biggest tennis stadium in the world. And it's funny. I was just up there. Usually, of course, I sit much lower down, much better seats. But I was visiting a friend of mine the other day, and we were way up there, last row. And it is funny. I mean, you're really looking straight down. It's almost like you have a straight bird's eye view. And, they are tiny. But you can still see it very well. You can still see the angles. It's an interesting view.
What's the weather going to do? I know it's been hot, but it's been pretty sunny skies over the last, 10 days or so. Is the weather going to throw kind of a monkey wrench? It looks like there's going to be rain for the next couple of days.
Yeah, it's very light rain now, but if there's even the slightest bit of rain, you can't play on these courts because they get slippery. So, tiny, tiny, tiny bits of rain they just can't play. So that's going on right now. And, whereas at the French Open on clay, you can play on that if there's a little rain. Same thing. It's a little trickier at Wimbledon because it gets slick but on the grass, but you can still play through a little bit here. It's too dangerous.
About 30 seconds before we have to say goodbye. So on a rainy day, David, what do you do?
Oh, I go to the cafeteria and I get some food and drinks and stuff. We have to put something in the paper, so we have to come up with stuff. So that's going to be a big challenge. Much bigger challenge when they don't play than when they do.
But there must be some, I'm almost out of time here, some behind-the-scenes stuff that we never get to see.
There's a ton. There's a lot. Trouble is, the New York Times puts a lot of emphasis in tennis, and we've covered a lot of those behind-the-scenes stories in the past.
So no repeats.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it's very interesting. I'll give you an example. I mean, if you walk around the area where the locker rooms are, there's a player's lounge. And it's fun sometimes. Like, I was watching a junior match.
David, I hate to do this to you. I'm stepping all over you here. Thank you for joining us today.
Everybody play. You got it.
Thanks for joining us. David Waldstein. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We are talking about the U.S. Open in this hour of the show. Just said goodbye to David Waldstein. He's a New York Times sports reporter. Well, I kept wondering what Serena and Venus Williams were thinking when they played each other on Tuesday night at the U.S. Open. They have competed against each other many times before, but this time Serena had a lot on the line. The chance for a calendar Grand Slam, a rare occurrence in the world of professional tennis. She won in three sets and plays Roberta Vinci for the semifinals tonight, unless there is a rain delay. Well, joining us now is Melissa Isaacson. She's a journalist and an author. In fact, a columnist and feature writer for ESPNW.com and ESPNChicago.com. And Melissa Isaacson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, 1-888-477-9499. We are talking tennis specifically in this portion of the show, talking about Serena Williams. I'm sure you have some opinions about her. And you can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Melissa, I just want to relive a little bit of Tuesday night watching that match. And as I said, I was trying to get into those two sisters Masters heads. Not that they haven't played each other before, but Serena really described this as one of her toughest matches. What did you see?
Oh, you could just see it on her face. I mean, she, she looked. We're used to seeing Serena be very emotional, especially really the last year or so. Try to root herself on and kind of getting into the crowd. And she just looked like she always looks when she plays Venus, which is kind of, kind of semi-miserable. You know, she doesn't want to show too much emotion. She has a hard time against her because Venus is a good player, a great player, and she knows her game better than anyone. And you saw it at the net after. It was Venus consoling Serena after she had won. So I think that sort of told the whole story. It was really... We're used to seeing them, you know, at the net, but it was just really touching, I thought, the other night, the way Venus kind of took her in her arms and kind of, you know, like, it's okay, good job, you know, I'm fine, almost. That's kind of how I read it. And it's very sincere. They're really, really close. You know, they're 15 months apart. They room together at every tournament. They're, you know, they spend the evening together before they play each other. So I don't think anybody who has a sibling can't imagine how tough, you know, that would be.
For both sisters in this case. And I have to say, it was so much fun to watch Venus play on Tuesday night, playing against her sister Serena. There's something about the way she plays tennis that's just so beautiful, so fluid.
She is so beautiful. That's exactly the word I would use, so graceful. And because of that, all these years, I think people a little bit maybe underestimate her power. She's one of the most powerful servers and ground stroke strikers in tennis. I mean, she had the most aces going in, more than Serena.
Yeah.
You know, she was, both of them were in the 120s, which ranks them right up there with the men. I mean, you know, they can hit the ball really hard. And she just doesn't look like it. She doesn't look like she's just crunching it all the time. But she's a really beautiful, graceful player.
And she's 35 years old.
And 35, which is just...
Which is old in tennis years, right?
It is old. Yeah, it's young to me, but it's very old in tennis years, yeah.
And has some kind of immune disorder on top of that. So she's had some physical ailments as she has been playing tennis.
She does. And, you know, she doesn't talk about it a ton. She was diagnosed in 2011 with, I've tried not to mispronounce, Sjögren's syndrome, which manifests itself in many different ways, but one of them is just muscle soreness and fatigue. And that alone, I think she has it somewhat under control. She's really strict with her diet, but it, I think, rears its head from time to time. And again, she just shrugs it off. She doesn't like to really, you know, dwell on it or use it as an excuse ever. But you factor that in with her age, with just the longevity. Just, it's at an age with your body, too. It's kind of just going out there time and time and time again and being fresh and being able to focus. And, you know, she's had down times, there's no question. But when she puts it together, she's still... you know, can beat anybody.
Our first guest, David Waldstein, we were talking a bit about Serena Williams, and he said her biggest problem is Serena Williams as a player. Would you agree with that, Melissa?
Oh, for sure. I mean, she even says it now, you know, that she's really the only one who can beat herself. That's the level of dominance she's established, that if she's on her game, really no one can touch her. But she is also really vulnerable to self-destructing. So it does make it interesting when you watch, because she has developed this really kind of bad habit, particularly this year, of getting behind early and digging herself in holes. And part of it is, she even said, you know, it's like she doesn't really get her own attention until she's really down. It's like she has to hit rock bottom to get really interested and motivated. And then she relaxes, she said. So she does get nervous. It's not just bored. It's also nerves, which, you know, God knows she's a human being. And then she suddenly kind of has this, you know, relaxation, she says, she describes, and then bounces back, and then no one can touch her. She's got a killer instinct like none other. So it's really interesting to watch what she can do to herself and how she pulls herself out of it.
Well, it shows that tennis, especially singles tennis, such a head game, right? I mean, it's really, yes, you have an opponent on the other side of the court, the other side of the net, but you in many ways are playing against yourself.
You are, and you're totally alone. I mean, they've got rules now where you can have, like, a certain amount of, you know, coaching visits, but not in Grand Slams, and you don't see it very often. And so they're really unlike any other sport, just completely alone, without any guidance. They're not even allowed. Mm-hmm. You know, you see them looking off into the coach's box and, you know, kind of pleading or, you know, making faces.
Help me.
But they help. Serena sometimes cries. But she can't talk to them. You get, you know, warning and points taken, you know, if you communicate with your coaching back. So, you know, many of them sneakily will try to do it, will try to, you know, give some hand signals or something. But they really are all alone on an island out there with a lot at stake. So it's an interesting sport.
You were describing how Serena kind of gets herself into a hole, I guess, and then looks like she has to fight her way out. Do you think that is the way, as you described, that she kind of calms herself down, but she needs to be losing in order to be winning?
I don't think she enjoys it. You know, who would putting yourself into, you know, these kind of scary situations where you might lose the match, and in this case, lose the, you know, Grand Slam. But she's, it's become habit almost, and it gives her a lot of confidence when she does get to that point.
Yeah.
When she just goes, well, whatever happens, happens. This is what how she describes it. And then she says, you know, I suddenly kind of, the pressure goes away, and then she can just focus like crazy. And so it's not something a coach would tell you to do. It's not something any other player could afford to do. But, yeah, it works for her, and while she doesn't plan on it, if it happens, it's a really nice weapon to have to know that you can, you know, get right out of it like she has.
Well, we are talking about Serena Williams. Many people that love sports and love tennis in particular are wondering what's going to happen at the U.S. Open. Our guest is Melissa Isaacson, and she's a columnist, feature writer for ESPNW.com, also ESPNChicago.com. And any questions or comments about Serena Williams, the Williams sisters, some of the women players, certainly give us a call in this section of Radio Times. We'll be talking about the men a little bit later in the show. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Melissa, before we get some of the callers in on the conversation, I just want to make sure our listeners, especially those that are not paying a lot of attention to the U.S. Open or Serena Williams, what it would mean to win this calendar Grand Slam, as it's described. These are the four major Grand Slams. Winning them all in a year. I think the last time a woman player did it was 1988 when Steffi Graf did it. But help us understand the pressure that Serena Williams is under.
Well, the achievement itself is just incredible, and it's the reason why so few players have done it. It's, you know, you think, well, Serena's so good, you know, what's the big deal? She's won four Grand Slams in a row, not in a calendar year, but the four Grand Slams are played on different surfaces in distinctly different climates and different times of the year, obviously. There are players that are wonderful, historic Hall of Fame players. They go their whole careers and, for instance, can never win on grass at Wimbledon or can never win on clay because of the stamina it takes at the French Open or the power it takes to win on grass or the stamina it takes at the Australian when the temperatures are often well into the 100s. You know, I went, covered it last year, and every day it was 107, 108, 110.
Wow.
And on the court hotter. And so, you know, then you get to the U.S. Open, it's New York, and it's noisy, and it's crazy, and it's, you know, more pressure-packed, and it's hard courts, and it's a different game. And then you think about 2 weeks, you know, two full weeks, seven matches that you have to win against, you know, a really deep field. You can't have a bad day. You can't be sick. You know, Serena has been sick. She was very sick at the French, and she still pushed through it. So all those things considered, it's really one of the great feats in all of sports.
We have an email from Avi saying, is it possible to talk so much about Serena without mentioning some of the controversies on the court? And I do remember, I think it was the U.S. Open, where she was just berating a lines it was a lines woman, I think, or a lines person about a particular call. Do we see that Serena so much anymore?
I mean, she expressed regret over that. It was a really ugly side of her that, you know, some people like to dwell on, and we haven't seen it. We hadn't seen it much before. Will she argue with officials? For sure. Do other players do that? Absolutely. You know, we saw Simona Halep pounding her racket. We see players breaking rackets all the time. Victoria Azarenka will scream and yell at officials. So I don't think she was proud of it. I don't think that, you know, it's something that, you know, we've seen a lot of. Will we never see it again? No, I wouldn't necessarily guarantee that, only because she's a very passionate, very emotional player. They're all extremely competitive. So if they think they get a bad call, you're going to hear it. That was unfortunate, you know, sort of the nature of it. But, you know, it's men do it. They'll point to the fact that men do it all the time, and we don't pay quite as much attention. You know, McEnroe spends a career doing it, and we did, you know, criticize him a lot. But now, you know, 20, 30 years later, it's sort of charming, and he's made, you know, a career of advertising and stuff playing off of it, and it's funny now. So people think, well, it's funny for McEnroe, it's not funny for Serena.
Yeah.
Maybe it will. You know, maybe it will be in 20 years. You know, we don't know.
I don't know if I can wait that long.
I understand where they come from.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me get to Jeremy from Swarthmore on the show. And Jeremy, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. I guess you should tell us who you are.
Oh, thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I coach the women's tennis team at Swarthmore College.
Excellent.
And have been involved in coaching athletics for a long time. And my question is, with Serena Williams being such a great champion and has been doing this for so long, do you think that if she does win the calendar Grand Slam, do you think there'll be any more motivation for her to continue playing? Do you think she will retire?
Oh, interesting.
Well,
what do you think?
That's a great question. I mean, she did joke about it. She said at one point, I'm almost afraid if I win, I'll just want to walk away and retire. But then she quickly added, oh, but I have a really cute outfit for the Australian Open in January. So
she loves her outfits, doesn't she?
She does. She does. So that was, you know, she kind of joked. And for a while, when she was going badly, or not badly, but just having bad moments, we were all kind of thinking, geez, you know, she's in her 30s. When is she going to retire? Can she retire? Is she going to retire soon? I don't think so at all. I mean, she and Venus have both made a point of saying that they're not, that they're having fun, and as long as they're healthy and playing well and having fun. But Serena, both of them also really like their time away from the court. You know, they have many other interests, businesses, and Venus just got her degree, and Serena, you know, loves the fashion industry, and she kind of dabbled in acting for a while, and she has tons of stuff to do, and she likes going on vacations. So would I be shocked if at some point in the next couple of years she just abruptly says, that's it? No, but I would be shocked if she laid her racket down, you know, after the U.S. Open and said, you know, see ya. Mm. That would be pretty dramatic and shocking.
Jeremy, thanks for the call. Let's get Chris from Millville to join the conversation. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I follow tennis, and I am a little sorry that this whole conversation seems to revolve around the four major tournaments as being the only measure of success for a player, because when you look at the best players, their careers are so much more than that. You can look at how many quarterfinals they reached, what other successes have they had, as opposed to Nadal, who almost all of his success in the four Grand Slam tournaments was at the French Open. So I think that when you look at somebody's total career, there's a lot more to it. But then I also kind of like to think about the intangibles and how much is somebody an ambassador for the sport. And when I look at somebody like Roger Federer and even Novak Djokovic and Nadal now, I think they're wonderful ambassadors for the sport. And in the case of Serena Williams, it took her till she was about 30 to be anything like a gracious loser. And I think she has become polite now, and she's learned to say the right things. But that time that she brandished the racket at the lineswoman, I think that was inexcusable. And I think it's really a mistake to sort of pass over it and say, oh, people do that stuff all the time. No, they don't.
Well, Chris, let me just jump in here because we have to say goodbye to Melissa in just a couple of minutes. I want to give her a chance to weigh in on that. Melissa?
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear what you'd say. Sure.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, Serena's an incredibly polarizing figure. For whatever reason, people, you know, dislike her and people love her. And, yeah, you know, that was a bad moment. Like I said, did I say, you know, everybody does it, everybody threatens officials? No. Did she apologize afterward? Yes. You know, when you point to, I'm going to take the other side here for a second, take Serena's, you know, viewpoint perspective and women's viewpoints and perspectives. It's very easy to say, oh, the men are great ambassadors and, you know, they never, you know, they don't act that way and they're, you know, serve the game well. I mean, I'm not sure what that means exactly. Venus Williams, for one, is one of the great ambassadors in all of sports, not just because she smiles and waves and is nice, but because of the work she's done behind the scenes, getting equal prize money. Not everybody can do that. Not everybody has that type of personality. Everybody loves Roger Federer. I love Roger Federer. But Roger Federer has not been the best sport at times. There have been many times when he's not been gracious about his opponents. And you'll hear people who aren't huge Roger fans give you all kinds of examples of in the past of things that he's said that if Serena said it, you'd be all over her. So, you know, I'm a little sympathetic to Serena and people who seem to think that she's not a good ambassador purely by her longevity and her 20 years in the game. I think she deserves an enormous mm-hmm. amount of respect. And to sort of take this moment and sort of dwell on a moment she had at the U.S. Open, I think is really a shame, and I think it's not the time for it.
Well, Melissa Isaacson, we could go on. There's much more to talk about. I have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And she's a columnist, feature writer for ESPNW.com and ESPNChicago.com. And we have another person to talk about tennis waiting in the wings. So it's all about tennis today on Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with a couple of guests in this hour of Radio Times about the U.S. Open. Of course, Serena Williams and some of the other players as well. And while Serena Williams is dominating the news from the U.S. Open this year, there have been some exciting matches, some fascinating developments from the men. 34-year-old Roger Federer has been looking good on the court while Andy Murray and Rafael Nadal have been eliminated. And joining us now is Douglas Robson. He's a journalist who has covered professional tennis since 2002, and his work has been published in a number of publications, including USA Today, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, Business Week, and Reuters. And Douglas Robson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I do want to talk to you about Serena Williams because, as I said, it's been dominating the conversation and certainly the U.S. Open. But has the focus on her kind of overshadowed some of the other players, especially some of the other men who are playing at the U.S. Open?
There's no question about that. I mean, Federer is obviously still a huge name wherever he goes. But you look at players like Novak Djokovic, the number one player in the world, who has you know, arguably been playing a little bit under the radar. It's you know, this has been such a, you know, large story, particularly in the U.S., the Serena Williams story and, the you know, them playing, you know, once again on such a grand stage. But definitely we see some of the other players that have had some really interesting stories develop as they reach the latter stages of the last slam of the year get overshadowed.
Well, let's talk a bit about Roger Federer. I don't know, are you an old man when you're 34 playing tennis? He's the father of four. He looks pretty good on the court.
He looks more than pretty good. Last night when he defeated Richard Gasquet, he looked like classic vintage attacking, totally in control Roger Federer. I mean, he's the only player into the semifinals that hasn't dropped a set. He has spent far less time on court than his upcoming semifinal opponent, his Swiss compatriot Stanislas Wawrinka. And I mean, in the match last night, he hit 50 winners to 21 errors. That is a phenomenal ratio. That's almost two per game. It's pretty crazy.
What has he done to his game? Is it just sort of perfecting what he had? Has he added some new tools and weapons?
He has. I mean, he talked a little bit last night in his press conference about the racket switch. You know, he struggled for a while with making contact on his backhand and felt like he needed more
Doug,
power.
Doug, so, I hate to do this to you. We're going to try to get you on a better line. You're kind of breaking up, and I want to make sure that so you hang up. We'll call you back. I will vamp here. And again, we are talking about the U.S. Open, and I am a tennis player. I wish I were better, but it's a game that I hope to play until my very, very, very old age. And the U.S. Open, of course, many interesting stories out of the U.S. Open this year, including Roger Federer that we were just talking about, of course, Serena Williams as well, and who's been in and who's been out. So you can call us at 1-888-477-9499 and tell us what you think of the U.S. Open. Doug, do we have you back?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, that sounds better. Very good. You were talking about Roger Federer and just sort of how he's been able to up his game, I guess.
Yeah, well, Roger, he switched to a larger racket head a couple of years ago, and it's really made a difference. He talked about it in his press conference last night. He said he immediately felt an advantage with his backhand, wasn't mishitting the ball as much, and he felt more power on his serve, but he said that he struggled with his forehand, which is his biggest weapon. He had problems sort of controlling the ball with the new racket, but he's obviously adjusted to that. And I think also with the help of Stefan Edberg, who was another person that he brought onto his team in the last year and a half, he's, you know, started to become more of an attacking player. I mean, in his early days, you know, he served and volleyed some, and he came in more, and then the game sort of changed, and he found that he needed to stay back, and he still dominated. But the game has changed again, and Roger has you know, made the adjustments that have put him back into winning positions. So it's pretty amazing to see someone at his age that's been able to make these adjustments. You know, athletes are classically stubborn to make any kinds of changes. You'll remember Pete Sampras sort of regretted in the latter part of his career that he hadn't gone to a bigger racket head because he just was unwilling to make that change.
What about Djokovic? What do you see in his play?
Djokovic, I think, is a really interesting situation. You know, he has talked a lot this year about the holistic balance in his life and how he got married last year and he became a father and how these things have helped center him. And he's an emotional guy and he feeds off positive energy. He was sort of the court jester for a while and just toned down that act, but his whole life has sort of been devoted to channeling positive energy, but he has been outright cranky at the U.S. Open. he's criticized his own play. He, you know, has been unhappy with the level of crowd support he's gotten in New York. In his fourth round match against a Spaniard, Roberto Bautista Agut, after he dropped the second set, he went over to his changeover chair and he stomped on a innocent little racket that was sticking out of his racket bag. So he's been a little ornery, and, you know, I'm not exactly sure why, but the thing to remember about Djokovic is for all the talk of Serena Williams' quest for the Grand Slam, Djokovic's year has been nearly as spectacular. He actually has more wins than Serena. He's won more tournaments than Serena. You know, were it not for a sizzling hot Stan Wawrinka in the French Open finals, Djokovic would also be seeking a calendar year Grand Slam. And I think he recognizes that he's on the cusp of a pretty spectacular season if he succeeds in New York, and maybe that's sort of giving him a little bit more of an edge.
Do you see him making his way there? I mean, I realize there are a couple of people in the way, but making his way to the finals?
I mean, I do. I mean, he's been far and away the best hard court player in men's tennis the last 3 or 4 years. He's going up against Marin Cilic of Croatia, who's the defending champion, but he's 13-0 against Cilic. He's never lost to him. He's beaten him in straight sets their last three meetings, including in the Wimbledon quarterfinals. So he's going to go in there as a pretty heavy favorite. I would imagine he's going to tone down things and be a little bit calmer these last couple of matches, but it's been interesting to see, you know, how cranky he's been on the court.
And I do want to get to some of our callers. And again, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. But I do want to ask you, Doug, about a really fascinating story you wrote about a player named Marty Fish. He withdrew from the U.S. Open in 2012. In fact, he was going to be playing against Roger Federer. It's a fascinating exploration of the kind of performance anxiety that some of these players, including Marty Fish, can feel in some of these high-performance tournaments.
Yeah, Marty's story is a poignant story. I mean, here's a guy who really was a late bloomer, and he rededicated himself, got really fit, and was having the best run of his career. Made the top 10, and then this anxiety situation sort of hit him out of nowhere. You know, he had some heart palpitations at some matches, and it sort of morphed into this psychological debilitating condition. And he's been very open in talking about it, which I think has been a really wonderful thing. You know, in high performance athletics, we rarely see athletes that want to show any kind of vulnerability. And Marty has really, you know, made it a point to try to be open about his struggles. And, you know, he obviously sort of was off the tour for the last couple of years. He, you know, tried to play in fits and starts, but he wanted to sort of end his career on his own terms, which he did this summer, and he did at the U.S. Open. And, you know, he pushed some good players. He won some matches, which shows that he still has the talent. But I just think, you know, mentally he didn't feel like he could sort of take on the rigors and the travel that's required of professional tennis to make it.
Well, and what's so vivid and so frankly frightening is his descriptions of what it's like to have a panic attack. I mean, the sense of truly feeling under attack.
Absolutely. I mean, when he was supposed to play Roger Federer in the fourth round of the 2012 U.S. Open, you know, a dream situation, he couldn't take the court.
Yeah.
He was completely crumpled into a heap. He had tried to leave the next day, and he got on a plane, and these attacks were happening all the time, and he had to tell, you know, his wife told the pilot to turn the plane back after it had left the gates. He was then sort of housebound for months on end, having his attacks every half an hour, every hour. It was a really tragic situation. But, you know, he also has done a lot of work, and he takes medication, and he's worked with psychologists, and, you know, he's obviously a lot more functional than he was at that time in his life. So I'm glad to see that, you know, he's come around.
And he did play at the U.S. Open. He lost, but as you say, perhaps went there on his own terms.
Absolutely. I mean, he won his first round match. He pushed a quarterfinal, Feliciano Lopez, who made the quarterfinals in a five-set match, and served for the match in the fourth set. So obviously the talent is still there. But, you know, I think he really wanted to close things out, in on his terms, as you said. And I think he was able to do that in New York.
And that's Douglas Robson. He's a journalist who's been covering tennis since 2002, and he's been covering the U.S. Open, which is what we're talking about in this hour of Radio Times. And you can join the conversation. Call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Gaylord from, looks like, Newtown, PA. Gaylord, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just had a brief question. We've seen Serena put up numbers that are superior to a lot of the male competitors in the sport. I was wondering if we're ever going to see Serena pitted against some of the great male competitors like Federer and so forth.
A la Billie Jean King, right?
Correct. Battle of the sexes. Yeah.
Doug, what do you think?
You know, honestly, I know there's been a little bit of chatter with John McEnroe and the Williams sisters doing some sort of an exhibition, but I don't think that there's much to gain from it, quite frankly. I mean, women's tennis and men's tennis are different games, and, you know, obviously the top men's players would be the top women's players, you know, quite easily. If you create an age gap, then obviously the skill sets sort of converge, but I don't know what that really proves. In my mind, they're different games. They're both beautiful games. They're both powerful games. They're both great games. And I don't think there's any reason to mix and match them.
We've been talking a lot about Serena Williams during this hour, Doug. And how do you see her play on the court? What do you see as her strengths and her weaknesses?
Well, you know, as I've written about, I mean, this is sort of the wobbliest year of dominance in history. You know, she's scratched her way through all of these four majors with, you know, illness and slight injuries and lapses, and she's come back from all, 11 matches, I think, now after going to the third set. So, I think Serena on her game is far and away the best player in the sport, but she's susceptible to lapses, and if her level drops, she has the ability, unlike almost anyone else, to bring that level up when she needs to, but she's definitely liable to, dropping her level, and that's what makes her vulnerable, which is also what's made this sort of a very dramatic run to the Grand Slam.
I get nervous watching her. What about you?
I mean, nervous for her. Watching her.
What's that?
Yeah, I get nervous for her too, and the signs are very obvious. Her feet start to get sluggish, and she'll start gesturing with her fingers and talking to herself and looking up at the sky, and it's clear when she starts to lose her focus and when she starts to lose her rhythm. But I mean, the other aspect to this whole run, I think, has been very interesting to me is that I feel like there's been a real convergence about the whole Williams story. I mean, I think when Serena and Venus came up, they were sort of lumped together. It was always the Williams sisters. And then at some point, they really took on their own identities and their own personalities. And, they moved into separate, houses more recently, and their lives just took a different tack. But you can see here at the Open, that beautiful embrace at the end of their match in the quarterfinals, the family sort of being here, but, staying in the lounge and didn't quite want to watch the match. I mean, I found it was sort of brought the whole thing full circle about really one of the greatest stories we'll ever see in sports.
Absolutely. Richard Williams, their father, had said that he thought Serena was a better player. Do you think he's right? Better than her sister?
Oh, yeah, there's no question about that. I thought it was interesting. Venus, for the first time I've ever, I think, heard her say it, she admitted that Serena was the greatest of all time in her press conference after their match, which was a sign of I don't know if it was resignation, but certainly a sign of acknowledgement that her sister really is the better player. And of course, Venus being Venus, she was incredibly gracious about that. And I actually asked her what was the most satisfying part of the match, and she said that she was able to see Serena go on and possibly win the Grand Slam. I thought that was an incredibly touching thing to say.
I hate to ask this question. Do you think Serena Williams is the greatest tennis player of all time?
I think it's really hard to compare eras, but I think when all things are said and done, if she has the numbers that match Graf and Margaret Court, I think it's fair to say that she's the greatest player of all time, and she'll have the numbers, she has the serve, she has the tenacity, and you look at all the qualities that make a great champion, she seems to have everything.
And Doug, we're almost out of time here. She's going to play Roberta Vinci either tonight or, weather permitting. What do you anticipate with that game?
I think Serena is going to probably wipe her off the court.
Really?
Vinci has an interesting game. She has a very tricky and deceptive slice backhand. She moves well. Most of her success has been in doubles, but she's a veteran Italian making her first Grand Slam semifinal. Yeah. I think she'll be a little bit cowed by the experience, and I think just since Serena at this stage of the tournament is take no prisoners. I don't think she's going to falter, and I think she has just too much game and too much power for Vinci.
Doug Robson, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And he's a journalist. He's been covering professional tennis since 2002 and covering the U.S. Open. And that's it for today's edition of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about the program, including how to download a podcast, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.